You're listening to the Conroll Cast. Reviews of scary movies, interviews with cool people, and my mommy and daddy.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Conduit Cast. Just got done wrapping up a really good interview with Mike Flanagan from the film Absentia, which you all know that I've been raving about. Also, along with him, the two stars of the film, Courtney Bell and Katie Parker. Unfortunately, as is sometimes all too common with technology, the first few minutes of the interview, the audio was really screwed up, but I think we've been able to salvage most of it for you. And again, it was a wonderful talk about a film that I absolutely adore, so I hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
Yeah, it was crazy fast, this whole thing has been. And the film wrapped early July. The first cut of the movie was done by September, and the final cut was done by early October, and our son was born October 15th.
So wow.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're not using prosthetic bellies here, are we?
Oh, no.
No.
Wow. So right before, I'm going to throw this over to Katie first, but right before I do that, you know, we're coming up on, obviously we just passed the VOD, video on demand release of Absentia, and that has rolled out, and when the show comes out, we'll certainly, you know, do some informing as to where they can get that. But you know, you're talking about March and April starting this thing, finishing it up in the middle of October, and here we are, you know, essentially halfway through 2011. Does this process seem like it moved a lot faster than you anticipated it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's been kind of a blitz, actually. And it was very strange to realize that we were celebrating the VOD premiere less than a year from our wrap date.
Mm-hmm.
That was really weird. But the whole thing's been so fast. I think that a lot of us haven't really gotten to catch our breath. And now that this movie's kind of done and it's spoken for internationally, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, scooped up. So that's really exciting. The idea now that it could take, our DVD street date is actually tentatively set up for the end of February 2012.
Okay.
And we were initially like, oh my God, that seems so far away.
Even right,
though
right.
A very like normal timetable. Since everything else has been so fast, to slow down to a normal pace has felt kind of like an adjustment.
And who's distributing that for you?
Phase 4 Films is doing North America, and Moving Pictures is doing international territories.
Does it kind of make you feel or realize that you may just kind of sort of be onto something here? I mean, it happened. I mean, is that something that you're able to sit back and say, maybe the quality of the product here is such that it warrants the fact? I mean, because I have a lot of friends and a lot of colleagues who have struggled for years. One of the films from 2010 that I really championed was Stephen Castricios's The Horseman from Australia. I don't know if you're familiar with that film at all.
I'm not, but
it's an incredibly bleak and hopeless piece about a father who's trying to avenge the death of his daughter, but kind of realizes as he's doing it that all he's really doing is destroying himself. It was my number one film last year, and it took him 8 years from the time he started Principal until he got a DVD distribution deal.
Wow.
And you know, to go to see that and to talk to him and to then talk to you. Go ahead.
I think part of what accelerates our project is that Mike is also an editor. And he works, I mean, in reality, he edits reality TV shows for as his normal bread and butter right now. Mm-hmm. And he's really fast at it. Mm-hmm. And I think for, you know, a lot of projects, the post-production can just take eons because, you know, the director needs to sit down with the editor and they have to go kind of go back and forth when and polish and clean. And when those two people are the same person, you know, I think that helps the speed of it go a little bit.
Sure. But I think he's saying too, though, that the distributor took, nailing the distributor took 8 years.
Sure, sure.
Oh. Which, after 8 years after the film was completely finished.
From his actually, I think it was a 32-day shoot from the time he wrapped until he actually had, and he actually got North American distribution, first, was 8 years from the time that a DVD was actually available for North American, purchase. He did a ton of festivals and was just kind of nothing.
I used to think too, because, this is my fourth indie feature. Mm-hmm. The first one though, that's ever sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's this idea that when you finish a movie and you take it to the festival circuit, that you used to think distributors would cruise festivals to find.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true. I feel like you'll see things get picked up in Park City and at South By.
But right. Right.
One of the 0.2% of indie films that make it into those festivals.
Sure.
You're not going to attract a distributor at a festival. And I feel like, to answer your question, I think, it definitely does kind of make us feel really, really proud to find a distributor, very lucky. And, you know, whether it makes us feel like we're onto something good, I don't know, because mm-hmm. we also, there's the big frustration for a lot of filmmakers I know is that you see so many films that do get international distributions, often theatrical, that are terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, so getting it sold doesn't really mean it's not a verdict on the movie itself, at all. And then it kind of breeds an additional insecurity, because I think all of us, as soon as the film, when we watched the first cuts, everyone was really nervous mm-hmm. that the movie wasn't scary.
Mm-hmm.
We had no objectivity, and we'd watch the cut and just kind of be like, I don't think anyone's going to really respond to this movie. It's not working.
Sure.
It's not creeping us out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of doubt about, you know, whether it would be received at all. So it's been kind of really reassuring more to see the reactions from fans and kind of, even after we got a couple really neat reviews that people are like, oh, this is great. We're like, okay, well, that's just a couple of reviews, you know.
Right, right.
Your shoe is going to drop hard any second. And I think we've been very lucky that it, so far it hasn't really seemed to, so.
Yeah, well, one of the things with any film, but I think in particular Absentia, is when you're discussing a film, whether I'm sitting in my living room talking to my wife about it or, you know, writing a review or talking to a friend, is without giving too much away, it's really a responsibility to kind of preface what you're saying about a film in order to give the viewer an idea of what kind of tone they're going into.
Yeah.
Because I will say one thing. I think that the VOD image, poster, whatever you want to call it, is really misleading. That's not to say I don't think the image is well done. I don't think it best represents what Absentia is. It may in a promotional sense, grab the most viewers' attentions, but I do worry about it, you know, letting down the people who are going in expecting all kinds of kicking and clawing and screaming and hands jumping out and grabbing and pulling you in.
Yeah,
it's funny. I don't know how much we can really say about it, because we agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah,
Well, because like when you were posting it on Facebook and Katie posted it up, I was like, "Wow, that's dog shit." I mean, I was like, "Yeah, you're certainly proud that it's found its way to VOD, and I'm very proud for you." But at the same time, that's kind of where the quote unquote mainstream audience gets kind of sucked in, and then they feel betrayed.
Well, the fear that we had was that the people who would respond to that art would be expecting a different movie.
And sure.
And people who would respond to the movie would never buy it off that art.
Right.
And it's tricky, though, because it's like and this is a whole new experience for us. It's just handing the movie over to the distributor whose entire goal is just to move as many units as possible.
Yeah.
And when we posted that image up on Facebook and started to put it out there, it was after several days where the producers kind of internally got to kind of unload on it and kind of have these incredibly intense kind of philosophical conversations about what the art would do. Katie was very, I think, you know, cause the, also the woman in that image, we don't know who that is.
Yeah. I was just going to say,
I don't know if it's something that they generated.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had kind of always anticipated that our actors would be
involved in the image.
For the record, I don't think Courtney or I or anyone who acted in the movie really cares who's on the cover. It's just, like you said, it doesn't represent the film that was created that we poured our everything into, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just so telling of what it is to be an artist in Hollywood, where you put everything you've got, every kind of artistic strength you have into your movie, and then the industry just takes it and kind of does whatever the hell they want to with it to sell it.
Right.
And we really want it to sell.
Yeah.
But we also want to please the incredible fans that we've had and who've supported us.
And sort of like what you and Mike kind of have already said a little bit. But I mean, when I tell people about this movie, I kind of liken it to The Sixth Sense, which I think is one of those it was nominated for Best Picture, or I think.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and a couple people were nominated for Best Actor in it. For Oscars. And so it's like, you know, and it is a horror movie, but it's definitely a character drama that has really scary things happen in it. And I think Cinch is very similar in that regard. You know, I think it's a character drama, but that's very, very scary. And it is a horror. It definitely fits into the horror genre. But I think that people, you know, the box art, the box cover art that you know, Phase 4 says is going to sell the movie, does look a little bit more like a slasher film, which I think, you know, The Sixth Sense is a movie that appealed to a broader audience of not just horror fans.
Sure.
But they knew that they could sell a certain number of units off of the two words, Bruce Willis.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, that we can't put that on the poster.
Right.
Although
right.
it'd be just as misleading as... I think we're all very much in agreement and I'm really kind of psyched to see what the international art is going to look like, because it's a whole different company doing that.
Sure.
And I know that when it comes to some of the foreign markets, they don't necessarily go for that kind of like very obvious direction. So I'm kind of hoping we'll get something a little more representative of the film. But the other thing too is that the character drama with horror elements is not a particularly successful niche. And
it's not.
Yeah. And it's tough, because as much as I agree with everything about that art, we've even done weird little experiments, where our sales rep held up the design we made, which is the silhouette in the tunnel.
Yes.
That we really liked.
Mm-hmm.
They held that up, and they held up the new one across the room to people who didn't know anything about the movie to see which one they'd reach for. And everybody went for the Phase 4 art. So.
That's so fucking gay. Sorry.
Sweet, we can swear on this program. That makes me really happy.
This, we freely welcome and rock the explicit tag on the Conduit cast. So,
yeah,
swear away. It's subliminally ingrained the infant in your room with proper language.
Oh, he's picking up all.
Well, before we go too tangent here, let's I wanna hear from Katie. You know, Katie, you were someone that I just kinda, you know, Mike sent me the film, I watched it, I stalked you down on Facebook, I you know, hoped that you would accept the friend request. You did. I posted the review on your Facebook wall. How old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay, so you're 25.
Yeah.
And you've lived a little bit of a life here. I don't think we can say that you're a baby or you're inexperienced in the ways of the world.
Yeah.
But you come into this film, into this role, and you're kind of asked to be this wayward soul who's kind of bouncing around, may or may not be attempting to escape some kind of shady past. Maybe trying to get her life together while at the same time providing some source of comfort to Trisha.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got Courtney, who's playing Trisha, kind of looking at you cross-eyed with everything that you do because, you know, she's going off her history with her sister.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the character that you play and... I guess what, you were 23, 24 at the time? 23?
24.
24 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you come in, and is this the type of character you know you're going to have to portray, or are you kind of working at shaping and molding this with Mike as you go along?
Well, like Mike said, we had very little time to prepare and even talk about the characters. We had one read through. And fortunately, Mike's just a good writer, and I think all the actors would agree that everything, all the tools we kind of needed were in the script,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, in the dialogue. I really wanted to approach Callie, like, with a fresh start. Like, the first scene, though she's smoking cigarettes, she's like, there to change her life and to help her sister and mm-hmm. really forget everything.
Right.
And I think that's something that kind of helped me in terms of getting the audience on my side. But yeah, Callie's just kind of a hot mess who I think doesn't really know where she's going. I think the only thing she's certain of is that she loves her sister and thinks that that Trisha is the only thing she's got left that's worth Wild, that and her nephew niece, as referred to,
mm-hmm.
Belly in the film. So yeah.
So, I mean, and we'll just backtrack here a bit. You know, I talked about the way Absentia affected me, and also about my colleague, you know, James DiPaolo, who said this was going to be in my wheelhouse, and the reason he knew this was going to be in my wheelhouse is because I have a real affinity for not only character driven, but reality driven genre films in terms of, you know, ghost stories can be scary and, you know, monster movies can do the same, but I have a real affinity for kind of man's inhumanity to man. Also, you know, emotional and, kind of, you want to call it spiritual, I don't know if that's the right word, but struggles that go on within people. And there were so many moments in Absentia that really creeped me the hell out. Mm-hmm. But what really kept me engaged in the story and really allowed me to suffer throughout the narrative was this relationship between the two sisters.
Yeah.
And was the kind of push and pull that even though there's a tremendous amount of chaos going on around them, there's also a good bit of emotional trauma that's being explored here. And I think some of the scariest things for me were family related, issues.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you've read my thoughts on it and people can read them as well, but it just, watching you, Katie and Courtney, try and be there for each other and push each other away and pull each other closer and, distrust each other and then lean on each other throughout this whole, film was really emotionally trying for me. And, I think that one of the strengths of Mike, your writing and these two, incredible actors' performances was the fact that, you know, even though there is this really visceral horror element underneath, it's like what keeps you more off balance and unsettled is the way that these two women are experiencing this horror together and separately. And, Courtney, if you want to, you know, touch on your part the way Katie did, going in, were you more concerned with how you're going to interact with your quote unquote sister and let the horror happen on the periphery, or were you also real focused in on, you know, the loss of the husband and the kind of creepy creepers that were going to be creeping in?
Yeah, I think probably the latter is more what I felt the need to kind of focus on as an actor. Again, Katie and I have been friends for a couple years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mike said this already. She started out, we met because Katie was my understudy in a play.
Okay.
And then Katie moved out to L.A. about 6 months before I did. And then as soon as I got here, we started hanging out, and she would come over and hang out with me and Mike. And she and I have a very natural sisterly relationship anyway.
Yeah.
You know, she comes over and talks about boys and what should I do with my career. And, you know, that, so all of that, I feel like our relationship comes off very naturally in the movie because it kind of is our relationship naturally.
Sure.
And so, you know, that experience seemed very easy to sort of bring to camera, I guess. Whereas the disturbing, very unnatural experiences that were going on with Daniel and to a point with Mallory, I think were certainly where I felt the need to kind of focus on making that. Yeah, I mean, again, I think the writing, it's all very apparent, but,
people really like to focus on, Callie and Trisha's relationship, which I think is beautiful because you don't see movies that focus on, I think, sisterly relationships, especially with like one being pregnant. Like it was just this like really new, innovative idea.
Or if you do, it's like, you know, it's like a girl movie.
It's like a girl movie. Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And I don't know, like, the thing is, though, and I don't want to, like, disregard from Courtney and Mai's acting ability,
mm-hmm.
but it's all just really built in. And the thing is, the way we shot the movie,
mm-hmm.
and the scenes where Courtney and I hate each other, and we're having
mm-hmm.
arguments, and we're crying, and we're hitting
mm-hmm.
each other, we were so, I mean, we shot those scenes at, like, 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After no sleep.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie slept at our apartment the entire shoot, and so did
So
I.
You basically hated her at that point.
Yeah,
absolutely. And she was pregnant.
I was pregnant. Yeah, I make no bones about this. Like I was very good about it. I was always, you know, I never yelled at anybody, but I was definitely cranky on the set, and I think people could get a sense of that. But you know, it was like Katie was in our space, and you know,
it was built in.
It was built right into the whole shoot process. And
mm-hmm.
and it was also built into the writing,
yeah.
too,
mm-hmm.
Which I think Mike handled very well. And Mike is very observant. I have two sisters and one stepsister, and I think Mike took a lot of observances from the relationships that I have with all three of them that are very different and put a lot into Trisha and Callie that were familiar to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, you bring up Mallory, who's played by Dave Levine, and Daniel, Morgan Brown. And, there's certainly other characters involved. I mean, obviously, one of the big names, and no offense, I don't know why he's a big name, because a lot of times he appears in makeup, but he's certainly made a name for himself because of his gangliness, is Doug Jones. And he's just gotta be a freaky motherfucker to be around, because he's so...
He's absolutely the opposite. He's like the most humble and kind, generous.
Oh, I don't doubt that, but he's got to look creepy.
He definitely is like 6'4" and 125 pounds or something like that.
Sure.
He's definitely like, oh God.
And you can spot him across the street.
Yeah.
He's the giant praying mantis across the street.
Sure.
Lyle actually talked about trying to put him in a costume to make him play the creature.
Mm-hmm.
Final shot of the movie, remember that?
I forgot about that, yeah.
Would have been a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But it was just like, we need a giant bug thing. Doug can do it. He can do anything.
He can do anything physically,
So
there was talk of a big time reveal, huh?
There was very little talk. Mm-hmm. I think the original draft had a final kind of image when Mallory's walking across the street and looked at the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
It was of Callie standing at the mouth of the tunnel, but with this thing kind of standing behind her,
mm-hmm.
kind of holding onto her by the shoulders. But you could see, and it was only going to be like 15 frames.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be able to see the creature, but it just became very clear that not only couldn't we come up with anything really convincing,
mm-hmm.
That people, it was like, it'll only be 15 frames. They're like, well, yeah, except people can freeze frame it.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll completely ruin the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was unnecessary. Again, like the whole movie is sort of, you're creeped out by the seeds that are planted in your head, but you don't actually get to see, you don't get to see very much at all. And to sort of right at the very end be like, and here's the monster.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah,
and if you want to deal in kind of traumatic visuals, I mean, let's talk about the monster here for a second. I mean, the most, for me personally, the most traumatic image that has anything to do with what could or could not possibly be stalking these poor people is, you know, when poor Daniel is on the staircase. And, the funny thing is it's in the trailer. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the images that really like made me want to see it, but made me afraid to see it. Cause I wasn't sure how far you guys were going to go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And when poor Daniel again is lying face down on the staircase and, just the look in his eyes and he knows that it was only a matter of time. And
right.
when those digits, fold down upon his shoulder, it doesn't matter that it was in the trailer or not. It absolutely sends chills up my spine. I can't, like talking about it right now too, makes me believe that it's in some way, shape, or form, that's the way I'm going to go out. Like, that's how I'm going to feel, that whatever's taking me into the next phase of life or afterlife is going to be something like that. And that is, thank God you didn't show too much of this thing or have 10 or 15 frames of it, because that was enough for me. My God.
Now, I remember the first time we saw that shot, because that was one of our few visual effects shots.
Mm-hmm.
And we had sent the shot of Morgan on the stairs where there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
and sent it to the guy who did the effects, this guy Mark Sniffen. He just sent that back. I was like, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time we opened that image, we're like, oh my God,
yeah.
That's awesome. That's absolutely horrifying, because I hadn't really asked for anything that specific. I was just like, just have something move kind of over his shoulder so that you get the idea that something else is sharing the space.
Right.
But the idea of the fingers, you know, mm-hmm. kind of closing on the shoulder, that was not what I expected. And that really, you know, brought forth a reaction for me, so I assumed it would definitely do that for anybody else.
Well, I think because it's such an emotional, character-driven, dark genre drama to that point. I mean, you get the scenes of, you know, Katie, when you're in the bathroom, early on, I mean, that kind of stuff usually doesn't bother me, but that really bothered me.
Waiting.
And it's like going through this with you guys when that really happened, when Morgan is taken away, I mean, that guy, I'm sorry, Mark Sniffen, mean, that guy, he really deserves a lot of credit, because too often when it comes to those types of effects, people go way overboard. Mm-hmm. And that was brilliantly played, for sure.
Well, he just got it kind of right away. He had just graduated college. Mm-hmm. I actually never met him. I've never talked to him. Mm-hmm. Only have ever communicated by email.
And when
I kind of got in touch with him, but I kind of got in touch with him to bring him on board for it. He, mm-hmm. He was like, so what, what do you want to do? I don't have much time. And, we had no money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want you to do the kind of effects that are so minimal that people might miss them if mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. not really paying attention. Because the last thing we want to do, like you're saying, is be explicit and bad.
Sure.
And go overboard with it. And he internalized that so completely and delivered that one. The two that really blew me away were the one we're talking about, and the other is, it's a very fast shot of Daniel at the mouth of the tunnel holding on to the post.
Yep.
And there's just some kind of shape behind him.
Yep.
People miss a lot.
People miss that, yeah. And I love that they miss it. I love that it's that subtle. But
mm-hmm.
we had shot that not knowing if we'd ever have visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
We had shot it kind of hoping that it would work without them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the stairs mm-hmm. and that bit, we liked it without anything. And then once we kind of saw what he did, it was just perfect. And it's kind of a funny mix, because there are these tiny little digital effects like those moments. And mm-hmm. of course the ceiling, mm-hmm. This is kind of actually our biggest effect is that kind of rubber ceiling look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had two practical effects as well that we did in camera, that were really low tech, that, mm-hmm. One being, kind of right as he's being taken, and there's a shot of Callie against the wall, and this thing kind of arches in the foreground.
Oh.
in front of her. Actually not digital. That's Justin Gordon, who played Detective Lonergan, wearing a black leather jacket. and just kind of hunching over in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, if that's the only thing we ever see, we're going to have to make that work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one, the very final shot of the film, when you're looking at the shoulder and the little kind of, I don't want to spoil this for people, but yeah, there's a shot there. The thing that you're seeing moving at the very end, which some people have thought was digital, that's actually two twigs that we picked up off the ground about 20 seconds before we shot that.
Right.
I was actually puppeting them.
It wasn't even planned. I think we were trying to get another shot, and Mike found these two little twigs, and he was like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so for a while, we just called the monster on the set, we called him Twiggy.
Mm.
Twiggy Jacket was the name of the monster. And because there was that sense with that final shot in particular, I remember we didn't know how it would ever come off.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we had intended to do some kind of hand thing with Doug Jones. And he's such a physical actor. It was like, oh, we'll get the right kind of prosthetic hand thing for him and he can do something. And,
sure.
And then we ran out of time on his day, right? We just never got to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the twigs were like a 11th hour improvisation that I love. Mm-hmm. And,
Well, that's, I mean, that to me is really how, or I should say the place that I feel CGI has in the industry is as kind of, augmenting or complementing what's there, because in all honesty, you're not, in this case, certainly we're very fortunate to land this guy. But you're not, you're not really positive in terms of what is a CGI and what is practical, and that's when it works the best.
Yeah, I agree.
And it really did in this case. And certainly I don't want to sell short the other performances in the film, but there's some other dynamics going on here. I mean, obviously you have Trisha, whose husband Daniel has been missing for 7 years, right so far?
Yes.
Okay. Callie comes around because at this point Trisha's going to be able to sign off on Daniel's death certificate. He's declared missing in absentia. Yes.
Dead in absentia.
Dead in absentia. Sorry.
And that is actually 7 years is the legal precedent. Deal. Yeah.
If they hadn't come back in 7 years, they ain't gonna come back.
Yeah, and you can't actually move forward with declaring someone dead without a body, or without reasonable, like they're on a ship that sinks, you know, something like that. You could do it, but
okay.
If someone vanishes, they make you wait 7 years before you can ever collect life insurance, before you can. It's so many kind of mundane things that have to be done when the process happens. The fact that they forced people to wait that long was something we thought was really
upsetting.
Sad and interesting.
It is, and there's also that, you know, not to intrude on any of your beliefs, but there's also that glaring number seven, the significance of that number seven that kind of hangs over everything. It's like, why is it 7 years? Why not six? Why not eight? Why not five? It's seven.
And you're talking the biblical...
of course, yeah. Yeah.
No, I was raised Roman Catholic, and there's a lot, being kind of a student of world religion for that, there's all sorts of really fascinating, dark, strange things to be found there.
Yeah, and how it still seeps its way into our society.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that whole concept that the girls discuss at the very end of the victim souls was something that my father had gotten a book about near-death experiences when I was a kid.
Sure.
And it was a book about not the people who see the tunnel in the light, but people who had a different experience and who thought that in their, you know, 2 minutes of being dead in the hospital thought they were going to hell. And it was a terrifying book. I remember reading it in grade school, and there was a whole chapter in there about poltergeist hauntings and things like that, because this is stuff that, you know, even the Catholic Church today takes very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole concept that there are victim souls that are allowed to be tormented for no reason by demonic forces is such an awfully terrifying idea. That idea that, you know, there's no safety net even from a loving God against evil as a child just scared the hell out of me.
Oh, believe you me, brother, I spent the better part of my adolescence sitting, kneeling, standing, and praying over and over and over again in a Roman Catholic church. So
they're good at seeding horror movie ideas. Spent enough time in those pews, you come up with all sorts of dark stuff.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
No kidding. So we go into this, and you know, Katie arrives and Courtney, Trisha, she pregnant. and Detective Mallory, who's kind of been on the case, there's some, you know, a little bit of gray area there. We don't know what kind of relationship is going on there, but you know, Kelly shows up. She's going to support Trisha, help her to find the strength to sign off on this dead in absentia, and get ready to collect Daniel's life insurance money. And I found this just really sad and tragic, and just like the very epitome of adding insult to injury. It's like the night pen meets paper is when these kind of visions that Trisha's been having in terms of, you know, just being haunted by the memory and the absence of her husband, Daniel. They come to fruition, and, you know, Trisha comes downstairs and essentially, you know, it's legally and, the state, as it were, the powers that be have declared Daniel officially dead. And there he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
I think there's a lot of, insult to injury kind of for all of them as it goes along with, I mean, sometimes I've heard people laugh during the audience by the second or third time you hear someone say, you need to file a missing persons report.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I was really concerned about that because it's not a movie that we ever were really playing for laughs.
Right. Right. But,
oh, wow. No, that's so terrible.
Yeah.
That there's really no other way to react.
Yep.
Which kind of once we figured that out, it's been really kind of awesome to see just how emotionally invested people can get in the characters when you see that it does get so cruel to them.
Well, it is because it's incredibly, I mean, because then what you have is you're not really sure what Mallory's dynamic in this whole thing is.
Yeah.
But you have Callie who's there to support Trisha in her loss. But then all of a sudden, you know, Daniel's found in a sense.
Yeah.
One of the real tragic parts of all this, and I don't know, I don't feel like this is spoiling the film, but if you feel like I've gone too far, just let me know and I'll take this out in the edit. One of the things that really tugged at my heartstrings and I found really horrific was Trisha, letting Daniel's parents know that he was back and, them, you know, planning on reuniting with him.
Yeah. That's actually, Courtney can talk about that. That was a really, very intense scene.
And on top of that, what happens after when she, needs to kind of reveal additional news about Daniel's whereabouts.
Yeah.
How the hell would you handle that in real life? I mean, my God,
no,
you know?
I think that's one of the great things about this script is that it really makes the audience, I think, sort of say, what the hell would I do if I, you know,
sure.
How do you really handle all this stuff? Because they are incredible, like, they're very complicated situations with no easy solutions.
Well, yeah, because it's not like you tell your mother-in-law you found her diamond earring and then you lost it again. It's not like it's in between the sofa cushions like this.
Right. Yeah, I picked it up, but then I went to wash it off and it fell down the drain.
Right.
So, you know,
sorry.
I mean, it was. Well, and there's a couple scenes, I guess, that takes place over because I first call from the hospital.
Yeah.
To say, you know, Daniel's been found. Then I try to call.
To say, never mind.
To say, oh God. And then there's when they actually come over. And I think shooting that scene was probably one of my favorite scenes to shoot. Because it's a completely silent scene. Basically.
And it was much longer than what's actually in the movie.
Well,
you guys built up to that.
We did, yeah. I mean, I mean, it was never...
Well, I'm sure there was kind of like a sick pleasure in sticking it to the proverbial in-laws, too. It's like, finally gotcha.
Yeah, hated them. Oh, and by the way, I'm pregnant. Not his.
You're right.
I think at that point, that's probably... Yeah, that was not what Trisha was thinking of. But yeah, I mean, shooting that scene with those two... it was Connie Ventress and Ian Gregory.
Yeah.
Gregory. And they're two very... just great actors. They,
yeah.
They came in, they were on set for less than a day.
Mm-hmm.
And how we shot that scene was Mike said, roll camera, but just
roll
basically
play.
Let us, yeah. And I sat there and explained to each one of them what happened. And it was just this sort of, Daniel came home. Yeah, it was all improvised. You know, Daniel came home and I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone, and I don't know where he is, and I'm so sorry, kind of thing. And it was
all
just
your phone.
Yes.
I remember the sound guy Richard was panicking during that because I was, you know, like you guys needed your time to kind of get to that moment, and it was always supposed to play as just four shots without any dialogue. And he was like, "Oh my God, we're not getting clean sound. You know, you can hear a leaf blower outside. You can hear a car door slam while Courtney's talking."
Mm-hmm.
He was like, "No, no, no. What I need is for you not to distract them by by jumping up and down and saying we're not getting clean sound. Like, you
right.
can just let them get there. We're only concerned about the last few seconds of what this yeah. is going to be.
But right. I was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant, and it's not in the
and
movie.
And it's not in the movie. It was an incredible monologue of heartache and soul searching that will never be seen by anybody.
up and vanished like a fart in the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shawshank Redemption, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Good call.
All right.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, to constantly and continually heap praise upon you, I'm sure would sit just fine with you. But I just – one of the reasons I'm so so kind of humbled to have the three of you on the show is because oftentimes, you know, I'll get to talk to the director or I'll get to talk to the writer and director, but there really seems just like there's a wonderful chemistry between the three of you. And of course, you know, for those of you that don't know, you know, Katie, you're actually hanging out at Mike and Courtney's tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I was
here last night.
I
was over for dinner.
Oh, okay. It's just, it's a genuine pleasure to be, involved with and be in the presence of people who not only take their craft seriously, but also kind of come at it with, an emotional connection. And I think that really comes through, in the film. And it's been an incredible, kind of journey, and like I said, I'm going to say his name again. I probably shouldn't because he has an ego himself. But when DePaulo kind of recommended this film to me, I wasn't completely prepared. And one of the things that I just want to continually reiterate to people is this is not like, you know, your creature feature jump scare type of run of the mill movie of the week type of film. This is a movie that if you're not ready to really be horrified and moved on several different levels when it comes to, you know, sibling dynamics, you know, husband-wife dynamics, family dynamics, relationships between the world that we live in and you know, planes elsewhere, you're really not going to be prepared for this film because if you open yourself up to the emotional horror that's involved with this, you're going to be pretty fucking terrified.
Yeah. Pay any attention to the cover art.
Yeah, I mean, you know, halfway through the year, unfortunately for you guys, I'll be honest, Absentia is thus far my number two film of the year. Yeah, I really, really liked Attack the Block.
I hear good things about Attack
yeah.
the Block.
Yeah, it's Monster Squad on steroids.
Awesome.
It's Fantasia.
Yes, yes.
So you'll get to go see it. Oh, check it out, it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. But what, Mike, what you've written and what you've brought to the table and I can honestly tell you, you know, Katie and Courtney, you two are going to be fighting over performance of the year for sure with this, in the genre community and with the people that really matter. I think it was and is a film that I'll be revisiting often, recommending to people. I don't know if you've seen the review of the film. Over at Planet of Terror. Have you guys checked that out yet?
No, we just saw that's a new one. That was
yeah, one. That's James Cortez who I recommended the film to. And he loved it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well he is a great friend and a great colleague and does some great work over there. And we kind of have this email thing back and forth where he lets me know what he's watching that I need to watch and back and forth and a bunch of other guys. And, you know, he loved the film for a lot of the same reasons that I did, but I just, I really can't, describe, like, how, to people who are listening, how this film is going to kind of, you know, bridge all these gaps when it comes to, you know, visual horror, physical horror, emotional horror, dark drama, and some real sad moments. And I hope that you guys haven't just captured lightning in a bottle this one time. Hope that, you know, separately, together, however it may work out, I hope that you can kind of, you know, ride this momentum into future endeavors. Do you have anything, you know, in the works right now, or are y'all kind of in your holding pattern? I mean, I know Mike and Courtney, you guys certainly have, your little one to kind of take care of and look after, but, do we have plans on the horizon?
Oh yeah, we're actually full speed ahead on the feature version of Oculus, which I've been for years. So we've already got most of the money, which is always the hardest part. It'll be the biggest budget I've ever had by a mile.
Oh and, wow!
It's looking like we're going to shoot in February.
Okay.
And I'm actually taking a pretty giant meeting on it tomorrow. That might mean we get to go theatrical with it, which would be really exciting.
Woo!
So
wow.
Yeah, but it's another one that's it's very relationship centric, and it's kind of a sibling story, which is something that means a lot to me. And and I think it'll be hopefully even better. I'll have to get you a copy of the short, and for your listeners, you can get Oculus on DVD on Amazon. It's a half hour, but that a lot of people prefer that short actually to Absentia. So, I anticipate we'll be moving pretty fast on that. So, yeah.
Well, I'm actually pretty excited to hear you talk about that, because I actually you don't need to get me a copy of that. I dropped my 12. Or actually, it was $11.95, I believe.
That was that 18 cents that we got.
Yeah,
So, yeah, I got my copy of the Oculus Special Edition. When did I get that? Almost 3 weeks ago now. So I have the Special Edition DVD from Amazon.com.
Awesome.
And that's pretty crazy to think that you will be turning that into a feature.
It took years to figure out how, because the one thing the feature couldn't be, the short is one guy alone in a room.
That's what I was just going to ask you about.
Yeah. The feature is not.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's just an ensemble piece, and it takes place with two characters kind of dealing with it's a haunted mirror movie, dealing with it, in the present, and also kind of, while that's happening, there's a B story about their childhood and what happened to their parents that's intercut with it, and then the two narratives converge in Act 3 in a very bizarre and crazy way.
Yeah, because, I mean, essentially, the short just essentially deals with Tim.
Yeah.
And so you're gonna kind of go back and explore his family, his parents, and I guess especially his father.
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of like instead of him alone in the modern story, it's actually going to be him and his sister that are doing this together. And one of them has spent their whole life believing it was the mirror that was responsible for what happened to their parents, and the other was rehabilitated and no longer believes that is the case. So there's kind of a Mulder Scully thing going on with them. And then the story of what happened to the parents is very kind of Shining-esque. It's the supernatural destruction of a family, really. And the two together work out, but it took forever to figure out how we could make a feature version of that movie.
Mm-hmm. Without kind of betraying the pureness of the narrative to begin with.
Right. And with also making, you know, making that kind of, I mean, even one of my favorite, short stories. I'm a huge Stephen King fan. One of my favorite of his short stories is 1408.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when they were making the film that they kind of had to walk that line of being like, dude, the story is one guy in a room.
Right.
and they kind of strayed. They went through all sorts of different ideas to get out of the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think they all worked at all. And that was kind of something I was really hypersensitive to going into this. It's like, I don't want to do that thing where we go on a 25 or 30 minute tangent just to come back.
Exactly where you were.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay, so that was really just burn up 25 minutes of screen time, and nothing has advanced story-wise. So it was really kind of tough to keep that in mind. But I think fans of the short will really like it, and people can, a little trivia, Scott Graham, who plays Tim, plays the psychiatrist in absentia, and in his office is hanging the mirror from Oculus, which is kind of a cute little nod to the fans. Of which there are like, you know, a dozen, but you know, they were really passionate dozen. So,
so then Courtney will be playing the sister, and then Katie will be playing Tim's father in flashbacks.
If all goes according,
yes. It depends on the producers, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And if we can get Katie to look good in a fake mustache.
Right.
Or I have to ask her to grow.
I was
going to
say fake mustache.
I was actually going to chime in there and say that I have zoomed in on many of Katie's pictures, and I already think she looks pretty damn good in a mustache.
I think. So. On my resume.
can rock the mustache if necessary.
That's upsetting.
So, needless to say, we're looking tentatively again as February 2012 for a DVD release.
That's right.
Yeah. For Absentia, and that's the North American release?
Yes. And then actually we're kind of just now hearing from that major wave of horror film festivals that between August and November.
Right.
And kind of always hoped that this movie would be embraced by the horror film festivals, and it looks like it's going to be. So there will be, I think, a number of opportunities to see it theatrically before then.
Okay, and you'll keep me posted on those?
Yeah, I'll keep you posted on all of that. And we're in talks to do a very limited theatrical double feature with Molly Elfman's film, Do Not Disturb.
Okay.
We screened with them at Sonoma, Sonoma Film Festival. And we might take that out, I think, in Seattle and New York. For a couple weeks, this is a double feature, like late night thing, and see how that goes. But
how were they received?
Received well, and the movie's kind of fun. It's five short subjects kind of focused around one room, all done by different directors. So it's kind of got that four rooms.
Mm-hmm. The Tarantino.
Yeah, the Rodriguez Tarantino.
Yeah, feel.
And
yeah.
Other people who no one can remember, I think, because I only remember the Tarantino section of that movie.
Yeah, but, no kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's interesting, the idea of doing a theatrical double feature. It's something I hadn't heard of in a very long time, and it was like, oh, I don't know how that'll go. So we're, let's see what happens.
Anxiously awaiting.
Yeah. That's fun.
I just like, anytime it can be in front of a theatrical audience, I think we all just get really excited. So.
Yeah. Well, I think video on demand, has really, I mean, my God, we're living in a time where the whole game has just changed. But video demand on demand has really changed the way that a film rolls out. And it's just kind of neat and exciting. It kind of eases people into it, builds, you know, some word of mouth. But again, I'd encourage everyone. I definitely know it's on Comcast, because that's where I picked it up. Comcast on demand. What other outlets is it coming through?
It's Comcast, Cablevision, Cox, Insight, and I've heard rumors of one or two others. The one I know for sure is that it is not a Time Warner starter. It's actually meant that none of us have been able to see it.
Damn it!
Which was so disheartening, because it was like, well, we were going to have a big party and order a copy and kind of calculate, you know, what fractions of pennies each of us can grow.
Sure.
And we didn't get to do that, but I'm really kind of, I'm dying to hear how it's playing, because I think we did a search a week after it started on Twitter, just to see if anybody had been, you know, tweeting about it. I think there was a single tweet of somebody who was like, I just saw this movie on demand.
Yeah.
So that's big time, big time.
Yeah. I mean, we're one tweet endorsed officially. So
up in the world.
Yeah. Well, I have to be honest with you. I've logged on to and quit Twitter so many. I can't. It's too spastic for me. I really can't deal with it for some reason. And I hate it. I got an invitation to that stupid Google Plus thing.
Oh yeah.
And I'm on there, and that's kind of a marriage of Facebook and Twitter combined. But I don't know. It just all doesn't sit well with me, and I would take any tweets, twits, or Twitters about Absentia with a grain of salt.
oh sure, no, it's
but the people that, you know, are out there right now, I'm kind of, you know, IMDb is kind of hit or miss, but if you go on IMDb and you search for Absentia, you'll be able to take a look at everything that you guys are doing, and you'll be able to, you know, check out Oculus, and they've got some links to the VOD stories, and information regarding there. But it definitely is the type of film that you could kind of watch on video on demand, on your cable provider, and then kind of put it out of your head for a few months, and then pick it up on DVD and revisit it. Cause that's what I intend to do. Like I said, I have a screener, but I watched it on video on demand the other day, and then I'll be picking up the DVD. Do you know yet if you're going to have a Blu-ray release, or?
It depends on how the DVD performs, I'm told.
Okay.
So, I'm hoping. I mean, we shot HD and I would love to see it on Blu-ray. And
yeah, I was going to say, it looks pretty good, video on demand. It's pretty crisp, but I would really like to play it and take a look at it on Blu-ray.
We screen off Blu-ray at festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And, I love the way it looks.
Yeah.
I'm glad it looks good on VOD, because that was my other big insecurity, was I have no way of knowing how it looks.
Yeah.
But we're actually working really hard too to make sure that we're going to try to, you know, fit as many bonus features on the DVD or Blu-ray release as we can to kind of, you know, entice people that were fans of the film on VOD or find it at the festival and give them something, you know, as a thank you and a bonus if they then go and make a DVD purchase later.
Sure.
Yeah, just to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
We just watched as a cast and crew last night. We for the first time watched our little half hour making of that, which kind of covers that whirlwind period of production so well that it's kind of, as you look back at it now when we watch it, we're like, oh my God, that was insane.
And it's all compressed down into 30 minutes now.
Yeah, it just blows right by, and it's like, my God, we really, you know, if we had kind of known going in what it would involve, I don't know if anybody would have.
So yes. Right.
I mean, I think everybody would have been really scared to do it.
Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, it all worked out.
Well, I certainly appreciate and kind of when films like this come along, I know that all three of you are flesh and blood like me, but I get a little starstruck when I talk to people who have together crafted something so potent for me. And like I said, you know, people that are listening, if you want to check out James Cortez over on Planet Terror, and you know, it must be a James thing. DePaulo recommended this film to me. I loved it, and it's on video on demand right now. It's just been a genuine pleasure. I wish all three of you the best of luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you so much.
The pleasure's all ours.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Definitely. Mike, you're incredibly gifted. I know that you work in TV to support yourself. But what you've crafted here has really really something different. I mean, in a postmodern world when everything is very much recycled and you know, been done before, there are a ton of original and creative and haunting elements in this film. And Katie, you know, an actor like you, you're a beautiful woman, and you could have relied on that, but you really dove deep into this character, and your looks are not distracting at all. You really plumbed the emotional depths of Callie, and I just want to thank you for that performance.
Thank you, sir. That means so much. You have no idea. It's awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. And, you know, Courtney, just to know that you were Prego doing this, and the emotional, you know, the gamut of emotions that you ran during this film, and to know that you were gestating something quite precious there throughout. It was just the stuff that you went through on film, and the way that you relay that to the audience is pretty impressive. As I said before, Courtney and Katie both, you know, one without the other, it just wouldn't have been the same. It was kind of that perfect storm. So,
thank you.
You're very welcome. And, I hope that you can keep us abreast of what's coming down the pike. And what I'll do is get this slapped together. And, oh, geez, you know what? I forgot to start recording. I will. If I can get this slapped together, I'll throw it up there on the Absentia fan page, and link it to you guys off of the conduitspeaks.com. And again, I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Sir.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, I really, you know, personally just very much appreciate the support, because I feel like, you know, we love finding little movies too that really, you know, really kind of speak to us, and the fact that this did for you, and that it's you're spreading it out there to other people is just really huge of you. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and don't think for a minute that I'm the only one, because, you know, this is how this kind of stuff, like you said, does spread. You know, someone finds a gem, and we pass it on, and it's just it'll grow. And I think when the substance of the product is so strong that the steam that it can build is kind of unending. So you definitely, it's a substantial film for sure. And the three of you, you know, all seem like very, very kind, very good, genuine people, and we wish you all the best. Okay.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
You're very welcome.
Hey.
Take care, okay?
All right. We'll talk soon.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.